There's one other thing that makes tubby time the very best time of the whole day. And do you know what that is? It's a very special friend of mine, my very favorite little pal.
Hi there, and welcome to Baseball by Design. I am sportslogos.net minor league baseball correspondent Paul Caputo, broadcasting live, as always, from the Helmet Sunday Hall of Fame in my basement in Fort Collins, Colorado. Today, we're going to talk about the Akron Rubber Ducks, AA affiliate of the Cleveland Guardians. From 1997 to 2013, they were the Akron Aeros, A-E-R-O-S, a reference to the aeronautics industry. And then in 2014, they rebranded as the Rubber Ducks. Formerly, I think, one of the sort of new kids on the block that ushered in this sort of wacky era of logos. And now I think one of the mainstays in minor league baseball, one of the classic, the instant classics that we've gotten to know so well. August is Curve Brim Media Month on the Baseball by Design podcast. All month long, I'll be featuring the other five content producers for the Curve Brim Media Network. I'll be speaking with Ed Rivera from the Dad Hat Chronicles later on. Obviously, this is a Brandios logo, so we'll have Jason Klein back on again. And right now, I'm very pleased to be joined by the team's general manager since 2012, Jim Fander, who I spoke with back in 2014 when I covered this the story behind this nickname for sportslogos.net. Jim, thank you so much for being here.
Paul, thanks so much for having me. Great to talk with you again. Can't believe it's been 8 years.
I said in the intro there that this is, you know, sort of an instant classic. One of the things that I try to do in this podcast is tell the world that minor league baseball teams are not just pulling words out of hats, right? Like that there are connections to communities and there are reasons why a team would be called the Rubber Ducks. So you did it so well in the article back in 2014. I'm just going to ask you again. We'll break it into two parts. First, how come rubber, and then how come ducks?
Akron was the rubber capital of the world in the early 20s. The reason that a lot of, you know, families that, you know, that I'm a descendant of and a lot of people in this community are here because of the rubber industry and the way that the city of Akron was really laid out. If you kind of think of like spokes on a wheel, you know, you've got downtown. And then as you kind of move out, you know, Firestone is in kind of the east side of Akron. Goodyear was originally on the east side of Akron. Then they kind of moved a little more centrally located. B.F. Goodrich, which, you know, my grandfather worked there for 40 years, was an electrical engineer, was a big part of, just really their brand and their inventions was all part of kind of the history and the heritage of Akron. So, Akron was kind of, you know, built on the back of rubber workers. And that was kind of a big piece of Akron. And so when we looked at our former identity and the Akron Aeros, it really talked about a lot of things that were Ohio based, but not necessarily Akron based. And it was really kind of a nod to Ohio's work with the space program, work with aeronautics. But when you go to a third grade classroom and you say, hey, what's an aero? You get 10 different answers. And so one of the things that we found was very quickly missing in our brand identity was really something that kind of just paid homage to the history of our city, the history of our community. And rubber has been such a big part of us, what we've done. And it's kind of that, it's that roller coaster ride, again, riding high in the 20s, but in the late 70s and early 80s, a lot of the rubber companies were moving out of Akron and Akron really kind of had to reinvent itself. And now, years later, Goodyear has returned to Akron. They've got their world headquarters back in Akron. And so it's kind of back on the upswing. And Bridgestone has, merged with Firestone, and Bridgestone has their technology center here. So the rubber companies are still a big part of our history and our heritage. And I think that's what's really important when you rebrand a team. You really want it to talk about really three things. You know, one is the history, the heritage of the city. You know, the second, it's got to be fun. And you ask the question, where do ducks come in? Well, we play at Canal Park. And not only rubber was a big part of Akron's history and heritage, but also the Ohio Erie Canal. And the Ohio Erie Canal runs right behind the left field wall. We play at Canal Park. The stadium was built with the canal right behind the left field wall, going, stretching from Cleveland all the way down past Canton, down in Tuscarawas County. So it's about 100 miles, kind of a canal in the trailway that really you know, connected Cleveland to New York. And that was kind of a main shipping industry. And Quaker Oats were started here in Akron as well. And so they would ship the oats. The story is they'd ship them underneath the streets here in Akron down to the canal. They'd load up the canal boats and they'd float off. Well, on canals, many times we have a lot of ducks. And so a lot of ducks swim on the canals. They're a big part of, you know, kids love to feed the ducks and all that fun stuff. And one of the first rubber ducks was actually made here in Akron, you know, as they were finding things to do with rubber. You can make tires, but there's a lot of things you can do with rubber. So this is my very long-winded answer, Paul, but this is kind of how we became the rubber ducks. And it's a kind of something that was fun, something that talked about the history and the heritage, and something that kids could identify with, because we know that, you know, really our brand is the biggest part of our identity. It's all about the logo. It's about the history, the heritage, and then really your brand identity.
So I have to say, I'm a huge fan of long-winded answers because it speaks to how much there is to say, right? Like, I mean, I think to the uninitiated, to the people who don't know this story, they look and they say, oh, a goofy minor league team named themselves for a child's toy, right? And it's not that. It's so much more than that. And the really good minor league brands, the ones that have staying power, the ones that really build a name for themselves, are the ones that have these important stories that are relevant to their local community. That being said, you told me back in 2014, you said you were braced by your friend Scott Hunsicker with the Reading Fightin' Phils for this thing that happens a lot, especially with the sort of the wackier, the more outrageous the name, the more of a swing there's going to be, an initial backlash and then an acceptance, especially if it's a good logo. The Brandios guys refer to a thing called the J curve. I'm sure you heard about that near the initial dip and then the much higher, you know, rise on the other side. So how did that pattern work out for you?
Let's just say the J curve was very short. And I'll tell you, I give credit not only to Scott, as you had mentioned, but also Jason Klein, you're going to talk with as well. You know, Jason had been through many of these and he really prepared us well. And he said, you know, get ready. It's going to be 3 to 6 months where people are just going to be crushing you left and right. It's going to be tough. So put on those flak jackets, hunker down, get ready. And so we had our whole staff prepared for it. And I really think it was only about 3 days that we got the backlash. I mean, you know, we had a few calls and people threatening to cancel their season tickets. But what was really important for us was the name had to come out with the logo. And so when we, you know, a lot of teams will say, okay, here's the name. And then, you know, a few weeks later, here's the logo. And then here's the uniforms. And, you know, they really stretch it out. Well, for us, because of thinking, okay, it's going to be, like you said, a kid's bath toy, right? You know, it's you think of Bert and Ernie and Sesame Street. Well, we wanted to make sure that when you saw it, you're like, oh, I get it. Yeah. It's kind of that juxtaposition of like, well, here's what I think it's going to be. But when you see the duck and it's this tough looking duck with, you know, it's got teeth, right? You know, it's got that kind of representing that blue collar work ethic of folks in Akron. And I think it was really important for us when the brand came out, the name and the logo had to come together. And I think because of the way we did it, and again, all credit goes to guys like Scott Hunsicker and of course, Jason and Casey from Brandios. Those are the guys that really kind of walked us through it and it really taught us how to do it and how to do it the right way. And, a good friend of mine, Chuck Domino, was also kind of helping me with just kind of, you know, ideas. And he'd gone through it with the Fightin' Phils and with some other with other teams as well. So I think that's really what kind of prepared us to be ready for it. And like you said, it was a very short curve. It was 3 days. And then all of a sudden people embrace it. They're like, oh, that is pretty cool. That's kind of a good looking. Yeah. We are the rubber capital of the world. And yeah, I've seen a lot of ducks on the back of, floating on the canal behind the park. And that makes a lot of sense. You go to a third grade classroom and boy, those kids are all excited.
So you guys have some great alternate brands. One of them appeals to my sensibilities quite a bit. I've been to Akron twice, once during the baseball season, and I got to go to a game there. And it was the day after you all wore your promotional Screamers brand. Could sure. you describe what the Screamer concession item is?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we found out when you're thinking about these alternate identities, a lot of times they have, food is a great kind of example and a great way to think about it. Because when you think about, concessions, and you think about the ballpark, the relationship with food is pretty symbiotic, right? You come to the ballpark, you get your hot dog, you get your beer. You remember eating that first hot dog with grandpa way back when, you know, when you went to your first baseball game. Well, you know, food is such an intrinsic part of the experience. One of the things that we offer, one of the things we rolled out, this is back in 2011, 2012, is we rolled out the Extreme Foods menu. And we each year we've been adding to it a couple of items each year go on the list, a couple of items come off the list. But the Screamer was one of the original items. And it is a gigantic ice cream sundae. So it's a plastic batting helmet filled with 21 scoops of Smith Dairy Smith ice cream, then topped with bananas, Marciano cherries, sprinkles, whipped cream. I mean, it's huge. And you can just imagine on a summer day, you know, as people are ordering this and they're walking back to their seats and ice cream is melting down their arms. I mean, it's all part of the experience. It's all part of the fun when you come to a game. And so as we were kind of going through these different, you know, brand identities and, you know, I think Lehigh Valley became the Lehigh Valley cheesesteaks for a night. We kind of looked at internally and said, you know, what are some of the things that we do very well with our food? And the Screamer was the first thing that came to mind. Like, everybody's got to get a Screamer. They come to the ballpark. They're meant to be shared. They're these just colossal items that it's just kind of that wow factor. When you get these things and you bring them back to your seat, it is just part of the experience. So so for one night, this is, I think it was 2018. Is that right, Paul?
Yeah, that's right. That's when I was there.
Yeah. So in 2018, we became the Screamers for a night. And you know, again, had the jerseys to the players who were in the jersey. They had the sprinkles on the jerseys, which was kind of a cool look as well. And it really kind of celebrated kind of our extreme foods. And since then we've been adding to not only the menu, but also some of our nights. We even have a night this year where we become the Akron JoJo's, and the Akron JoJo's are actually a French fried potato that's served with fried chicken. And it's only in Akron, they're called JoJo's. I've got family that live in Cleveland that have never heard of JoJo's before. So it is very much an Akron-centric thing, but it's kind of fun with your food. So back to your question about the Screamer, I mean, it is a fun, you know, item that fans look forward to all winter long. They come to the ballpark, they eat it with their families, and it just becomes synonymous with the Rubber Ducks experience.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, you mentioned the brand of ice cream that you serve in that ice cream helmet, and I was there. I was not sharing ice cream with anyone, so I got one of the smaller helmets with the Cleveland logo. And since I have you on the horn here, I'll just make a pitch for it. I would love to get one of those little helmets with the Akron logo on it for the collection out here. So if you guys ever do that, I'm ready and waiting. But that particular brand of ice cream, I tell people, they say, what's the best ice cream you've ever had at a ballpark? That ice cream that I had in that Cleveland helmet was the best ice cream I've had. That brand of ice cream was delicious. So,
oh, thank you so much. I tell you what, we've got a great partner. They've been doing it for years. They've been known as Ruggles for a number of years. They've just switched to Smith ice cream, but it is excellent. It's made in Orrville. It's actually made right down the street from Smucker's. So you kind of have two iconic institutions about 35, 45 minutes from the ballpark. And you know, around here, people love their ice cream around here. Yeah. And there's a lot of different favorites, but I think the Smith Foods is the best.
That was definitely some of the best ice cream I've had at a ballpark. You mentioned the JoJo's. I was going to ask you about the JoJo's as well. I heard you on Mark Viquez's Ballpark Hunter podcast talking about the JoJo's brand. I wrote a short article about it for sportslogos.net. And one of the responses that I got from folks, and I wanted to, you know, this is my hardest hitting question ever on this podcast. One of the responses I got was that people in the Northwest, in Oregon and Washington, also call them JoJo's. Had you heard that before?
So I will tell you, I can refute that because unless this is a new thing, I one of my first jobs in minor league baseball was in Spokane, Washington. Mm. And I was in Spokane when I ordered a JoJo. And I said, yeah, you know, loved it. You know, again, first time living outside of Ohio. And I got these looks that like, they asked me like, well, you know, what rock did you crawl out from underneath? Right? You know, it was like, who the heck are you? And I'm like, the JoJo's. And it took me a minute. And I'm like, okay, yeah. Fried potato wings, the wedges. Fried potato wings. So unless Spokane is different from, you know, the rest of the state of Washington and Oregon, or maybe they have some recent Ohio Akron transplants. I'll tell you, when I, and that was 22 years ago, they had no idea what a JoJo was.
Well, you can't argue with real lived experience right there. So that's all right. You have two more brands that you've done in recent years. One that was unveiled in 2020 and then obviously got pushed back because of COVID. You were going to become Conetown USA and you had a sort of traffic cone based identity. What was Conetown USA about?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, Akron. And again, I think there was kind of like, you think about the perfect storm. We were in the middle of the largest infrastructure project in the history of Akron, and it was coming in three different stages. The Ohio Department of Transportation and the Central Interchange, which is kind of the main interstate that runs through Akron and downtown, needed to be overhauled. And that had been in the plans 10 years in the making. We knew it was coming. And it was just one of those things that, okay, we know we're going to, it's going to be a pain in the rear end to get around Akron. But you can take the city streets and you'd be fine. Well, then you remember when Flint, Michigan, where they had the issue with the water?
For sure.
I identified, I guess, when that happened, I think because the Akron officials to look through and say, oh my gosh, let's make sure that never happens here. And so they put in a brand new piping system. And again, going underneath the city streets, you know, mile down, you know, with this huge, drill called Rosie, and would go through it. And so we had two construction projects going on, infrastructure, water related, and then the third construction project that had kind of been delayed for a little while. And it was the Main Street, reimagination project. And we had the world, I think I will call it the world's largest Main Street. It's probably not, but the world's widest. It was huge. It was probably three lanes on one side, two lanes on the other side. One of the lanes is a parking lane. So, it was ginormous. And for the city of Akron and the size of it is, it was probably a little bit too big. The only day that comes in handy is when you do education days, when you have 115 buses, you're trying to park them outside. No. Those extra lanes really help and helps move traffic along. Anyways, I digress. So you've got three main projects going on. And then, the pandemic hits. And all of a sudden, all three of those projects kind of merged at the same time. The water project was ending. However, you still had all of Main Street ripped up and you had the ODOT Central Interchange being, redone. You couldn't get around Akron. And a lot of times Akron looked like a war zone because all this construction was happening at once. Now, because of the pandemic, a lot of these, people were staying at home and then a lot of these projects could finish faster than I think they expected them to. But during that time being, we really said, you know what? Conetown USA, like this is, the joke is that there's two seasons in Ohio. It's construction season and winter, right? Right. And there's always construction barrels. So that was kind of the idea behind it. But, it's funny, as we were talking with our friends over at City Hall, they got behind it because they're like, you know what, this is progress. We are really moving downtown Akron forward. And so the mayor's office got excited about our Conetown USA, really helped push it out. And then it's one of those promotions that just kind of caught fire. And it got better and better as when we finally did it. And then, of course, like you mentioned, the pandemic wiped it out in 20, but then we were able to do it in 21. So there was this anticipation as people were getting excited about what is this going to be? And I can't wait to get my jersey. Yes, I drive by this way and I can't go this way every day. So I want to wear my Conetown hat proudly. And I think that's what just kind of helped it, unintended consequences, but got a life of its own. And it got even bigger than we thought it was going to be. So definitely a lot of fun. It was one of my favorite rebrands that we've done.
That is it's definitely a fun sort of tongue-in-cheek take on a baseball brand for sure. The other one, you mentioned your four mascots that you have with the team and you're celebrating one of them when you rebrand. I should say that at the time of this recording, this is actually just a couple of days away. By the time this drops, it will have already happened, but you will be playing as the Akron Homers and you essentially have a big sort of purple pigeon as one of your mascots. And so can you talk about the decision to celebrate Homer the pigeon with one of your alternate brands?
Yeah. Homer's kind of our distant cousin mascot. When you think about the other mascots, we've got Orbit, who is part of the Akron Arrows brand. He's a space cat, kind of ties in the, kind of the space industry. And, we brought him along from the previous brand. Webster and Roberta are two ducks. So, Webster came first. Roberta, his female counterpart, came second. Roberta spelled R-U-B-B-E-R-T-A. And so they really kind of tie in. They're ducks. They walk like a duck, squawk like a duck. Right? So, I mean, they make a lot of sense. But in 2012, we actually came out with Homer the Pigeon. He was actually our second mascot. In downtown Akron, like many downtown areas, there's lots of pigeons and pigeons living all over the downtown area. And it just kind of, we wanted to do something different, you know, whereas Orbit and Roberta and Webster are all kind of fuzzy mascots. Homer is a 7-foot inflatable pigeon. He's the world's largest pigeon. He's huge, right? And so, you know, he walks around. Some of the things he can do is pretty entertaining. The suit was made from the same company that makes the Superstars, which are this national act that, you know, Clammy Sosa, Shark McGuire, they travel the country and they entertain fans of all ages. So we kind of got our own Superstar suit. And, you know, we named him Homer. And, you know, we had a name the mascot contest. This was all the way back in 2011. And you had mentioned Chuck Domino. Chuck was a part of that group when we were kind of brainstorming, what should we do? And I think Chuck's vote was Pidgey the Pigeon. Homer came from another person in our office. You know, it's always, you know, the names that you never think, oh my gosh, where that, you know, it's the guy who does finance. It's like, oh yeah, I think it should be Homer. And then everybody's like, I like that. That kind of works, right? So it kind of all came together. But the way the mascot was selected was really fun. And this was all Chuck's idea. So we split the room in half and we said, okay, we want half of you to come up with any color combination that you want. Mm-hmm. And the other half, we want you to come up with any animal that you want. So the first one comes out, it's a frog, and then it's a black and gold frog. And I said, immediately, absolutely not. This is Browns country. We don't want any Steeler, you know, anything, you know, related to the Steelers. So that was thrown out quickly. That was an easy one. Then the next one was like a camouflage dolphin. And I'm like, ah, it doesn't really kind of fit with Akron. And then the next one was a pigeon. And I was just like, yes, that makes a lot of sense. And then the color that came out was purple and white polka dot. I think someone was trying to be funny.
Yeah.
But we were like, that's got something. So we took it to the folks over at Brandios. They came up with a design for it. All of a sudden, boom, we had our, you know, purple polka dotted pigeon named Homer that came to life and was introduced on opening day 2011.
That is fantastic. First of all, that technique for coming up with a color combination and a mascot is really funny. I've never heard anything like that before. So I appreciate that story. I wanted to ask you, just because I like to have names with designers on things, the JoJo's and the Conetown and the Screamers logos, were those developed in-house?
No, those are all Brandios. So all Brandios. You know, we've been working with Brandios for a long time. You know, Jason Klein and Casey White have done an amazing job. They started with the Rubber Ducks brand, as we've discussed before, mm-hmm. and they were the ones that kind of helped dream up, you know, kind of the look and feel of the Rubber Ducks brand. And ever since then, we work with them annually. And so they pull off a couple of projects a year for us to work on and to get behind. And so each year we kind of have them do that. So, you know, this year it's the Akron JoJo's that they, and the Homers, mm-hmm. they help design, they help kind of dream up and it made them come to life. So it was fun. It was a fun project to work with. And, you know, our director of marketing and promotions, Kyle Hexenball, works very closely with those guys to make sure that, you know, it's telling the story. What is our goal out of this and what can we use this for? And we want to make sure that it tells the story of what it's supposed to tell, whether it's Akron centric, whether it's, you know, team centric, whether it's our community centric.
Cool. Well, I'm going to go talk to Jason about all that now. Jim, I took more of your time than I intended to, so I apologize for that, but I appreciate you coming on and talk to me. Where can people, I know that the Rubber Ducks are easy to find on social media. Where can people find you online?
Sure. AkronRubberDucks.com. I believe it or not, I'm not on social media by design. So sometimes you got to have that control group in there somewhere.
You must get so much done every day.
I do. And there's a reason, but I have the people that handle that for me. So, awesome. But honestly, it's been a lot of fun. And Paul, great talk with you again. I love the world of logos as well. And I think we've always tried to do is try to come up with something fun, unique that our community can really get behind. And it's been fun to see, you know, Akron and then folks outside of Akron that really, you know, love and appreciate the logos that we've been able to design and really bring to life. And so I think that's part of the fun of minor league baseball. So I'm excited to hear more about your conversation with Jason.
Well, the Rubber Ducks do such a great job with their branding and with minor league fun. And so it's a lot of fun for me to share the story. And yeah, it's, and all of these stories is what makes minor league baseball great, and the Rubber Ducks are certainly great at it. So Jim, thanks again, and look forward to speaking to you soon. Hopefully it won't be 8 years this time.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it as well. Thanks so much, Paul.
Thanks, Jim. All right, everyone, you know how excited I am for this. You know I'm always so thrilled to invite my friend Jason Klein of Brandon
Yes!
back to the Baseball by Design podcast.
We're here, we made it.
We're finally back. It's been like 3 weeks since people have heard anything from Jason Klein on this podcast. So,
we've been so busy and working on so many fun projects. I cannot wait for everybody to see what we're working on.
Oh my gosh. Well, this has all been, you know, you guys, I can't wait to write about it for sportslogos.net. You guys are always so generous about letting me know when stuff is coming up and sharing the files with me. And, you know, you've been in the news a little bit already with the Rooster Tales up in,
the Rooster Tales.
That's a fun thing you guys did this summer. I'm actually going to get to a game. I'm going to get to a Dust Devils game to hang out with Eric Mertens. And so anyway, I know you guys have been up to a lot. I can't wait to see what else you have coming. And hey, by the time this drops, maybe we'll have already broken the news that you're obliquely referencing here that we can't exactly name. So
yes, I hope so too.
But we are here to talk about what must feel like ancient news to Brandios, the Akron Rubber Ducks. I covered the Rubber Ducks first in 2014 for sportslogos.net. You and I got to speak then. It was one of the first times we spoke, I think. I spoke with Jim Fander back then in 2014 for this article.
Oh, Jim, I love Jim.
The Akron Rubber Ducks were the wackiest of the wacky. It was the brand. Now it feels like they're tried and true. What would minor league baseball be without the Akron Rubber Ducks? But at the time, that was the wackiest of the wacky. Oh, my God. They're named after a children's bath toy. How, from Brandios's perspective, did you guys come to the name Rubber Ducks, and how did you come up with this tire track, this fierce tire track duck logo?
Yeah, so we packed our bags. Every product, we feel like it's really a disservice to the fans, to the staff, to the community, not to become honorary citizens. We want to live the town, breathe the town. We want to eat at the local joints. Go to Luigi's and get cheese salad in Akron for all my Akron fans out there. And it was great. You know, we got to tour Akron and we really, it's very apparent. Akron is the rubber capital of America. Firestone, Goodyear, the blimps. Even the Heritage, where it was like an industry town where like the, you know, like Goodyear and Firestone and all those tire companies like owned houses in which the employees rented from. So it felt like more like a military outpost, if you will, than it did, a part of American industry. But, you know, being the rubber capital of the world, we had to figure out, okay, well, what is a name that's going to sort of lure people in, that's going to suck them in, that's going to get them excited, a name that's going to surprise everybody. And Rubber Ducks, I mean, it kind of came together pretty quickly. One of the important things about the brand is when you hear the name, you think Bert and Ernie's squeaky bath toy.
Yes.
And so we knew everybody was going to go that direction. In the same way, when we said Chihuahuas, we know people were going to go Yoke Hero Taco Bell, Paris Hilton's purse dog at the time. So we had to like flip the script and we said, we got to go complete opposite. And so, galvanized steel, rubber, you got like, there's flames, there's like, it's a duck. There was a lot of conversation about how do you make a duck that doesn't feel like Donald Duck or the Oregon Duck or, all those ducks out there. brought in the fire, obviously black for tires was going to be in there. We knew, there's going to be flame colors. So you get the oranges and the yellows and the reds that we explored. Blue to sort of, we love this idea. I think we got the idea when we worked on Pensacola, which was, Pensacola is a beach community, Gulf Coast, lots of neon down there, party time. And we had this idea of like, what if an electric sign reflected off of the back of the fish? And so that's why you see that like neon red, which is a reflection of the neon sign off the back of the blue Wahoo. Yeah. And we had the same sort of feeling, which was, what would a reflection off a like like a wet, rainy night, rubber tire, what would that reflection be? And so that's where the UCLA blue or Air Force blue came in there.
Awesome. Well, so the tire tracks themselves, right? The tire tracks are a big part of the identity. In the primary, the sort of backside of the duck's head is a tire track. There's some alternate versions where you've got the duck head and tire tracks sort of form these arms with fists. There's a letter A that is formed entirely by tire tracks. There's one that has like a duck foot that has tire tracks around it. So obviously, the tire industry is huge to Akron, and it's huge as part of this identity. I mean, this identity is as much tire track as it is duck.
Right. And that was the idea, was that you wanted to reinforce the rubber industry, the rubber industry's impact on America, the idea of burning rubber. So it was all of this effort to sort of make it surprising as a contrast to a, bath toy. And really, like, we wanted people to go, that's not what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. Because we had the pleasure of working with Chuck Domino on this project as well. He was consulting. Chuck, the godfather of minor league baseball marketing, Reading fame, Lehigh Valley fame, Richmond fame. And one of the things about Chuck was he always likes to surprise. He loves to take fans on the journey of, just the whole journey of the ups and downs of an identity. And our lot, I give Chuck a ton of credit. He really informed our process when we were young. He was like, here's why you want to do it this way. Here's why it works. I've been in baseball for, decades. This is why it's going to work. And one of the things that Chuck likes to unveil the name before the logos come out. Now, you have to be a really thick skin as a staff, because if you have a name like the Trash Pandas, the Rubber Ducks, the Flying Squirrels, and you release a name without logos, people are going to be like, oh my gosh, what I have imagined in my head is no, this is going to go really, really bad. Right. And so, and I think it was with Lehigh Valley, Chuck came to us and he said, I want the fans and the community to put in their imagination something that is going to be completely different than what we're going to present to them. Mm-hmm. So as a way, minor league baseball teams, as we all know, they don't have gazillion dollar ad budgets like big, pro sports teams. And so they have to, they have to get publicity. They have to drum up attention. And to do that, Chuck was like, I want to put the name out because we need eyeballs, and eyeballs is going to bring attention to our brand. And if we put the name out and everybody comes up with their version of what the Rubber Ducks is going to look like or the Flying Squirrels, that's going to work towards our advantage. And so when we put out Rubber Ducks, everybody's like, oh my gosh, Bert and Ernie's squeaky toy. This is terrible. And Chuck said, that's exactly what we're looking for. We're going to completely switch it up. So I give Chuck a ton of credit for his thoughts and all that.
Well, I have to tell you that actually just last week on the podcast, I spoke with Chuck for an episode on the Charleston Dirty Birds. And we got into all these other teams that, I know you didn't work on the Dirty Birds, but you've worked with so many with Chuck. And he really got into this whole notion of take something vulnerable and make it ferocious. And, the Rubber Duck exemplifies that perfectly, I think.
Yeah. And the reason it works well is because it's not only the story of the players who are, working their way up to the big leagues, but it's also the story of America, which is ordinary people like all of us rising up and achieving what we're capable of, achieving extraordinary things. And so I think that's why it works well, whether you call it the underdog mentality, whether you call it the sort of like, how did Chuck phrase it?
He said, take something vulnerable and make it ferocious.
Right. So you don't think of a rubber duck as ferocious. You think of it as something you play in the bathtub with when you're seven.
Yeah. And it's like putting a cape on a flying squirrel, right? Or taking a goat and, snapping a bat in its mouth. For the yard goats, that's even the chihuahuas, right? All of this is like, take something vulnerable, take something that you wouldn't immediately think of as fierce and make it fierce. And so,
I would add to that, Paul, I didn't mean to cut you off. I would add to that, It's we talk a lot internally and with clubs about what makes minor league baseball fun. And fun is, a lot of fun is derived from humor and tension. A laugh, if you will, is the release of tension, right? You're feeling something and then you sort of release it. And the tension that is visually put out there between a vulnerable creature that is trying to punch way above its weight, that's funny. It's a visual pun. It reads quickly, it reads instantly, and it makes you smile. And I think that's why minor league baseball logos feel so fun.
Well, and this one, you know, this one in particular, because first of all, it was relatively early in the sort of wacky era of the minor league baseball logos, right? Like, so it was still at a time when people could be surprised by a team name, right? I mean, there's been so much expansion of that in minor league baseball in general. And this one, I think, sort of set a precedent of you can do something that at first blush sounds like, oh, we just pulled a name out of a hat or we're just trying to be as wacky as possible. And then, I mean, I love it. I mean, I love it. Like I love the Iron Pigs one and I love, you know, the Yard Goats. I mean, these ones that have these stories where you're like, oh gosh, this goes way deeper than just surface deep. This is not just wacky for wacky's sake. So the connection to the tire industry, the connection to the rubber industry, the connection too to the fact that rubber ducks themselves are actually important. If I remember correctly, the first rubber duck was actually made, the bath toy was actually made in Akron. So
yeah.
So there's that connection there as well. So this is one that I really enjoy because it sounds so wacky, it sounds ridiculous, and then the more you dig, the more I have a reason to do a podcast because these are the stories I love to tell.
But you know, you said earlier, well, you know, this is so long ago and I remember when this is crazy, it's not so crazy anymore. And you know, the same thing happens every year is that a new minor league baseball brand comes out and people go, this is outrageous. How outrageous is it? And the question is, are they getting more outrageous? I don't think they're getting any more outrageous. I think they're just new. Because we don't think Iron Pigs at the time was completely outrageous.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was blasphemous, the Iron Pigs. And now we look back over, you know, a decade or so and we say, that's not so crazy. Yeah. And even the idea, if we can even go further back, you know, everybody asked me like, oh, I don't want to be embarrassed and these names are outrageous. But if you think about it, the Mud Hens as a brand,
sure.
It's like, it's a female chicken in a swamp. Like, you know, if we would have pitched that today, I think people would think that's outrageous.
Yeah. It's a fat little game bird. It's like, I mean, yeah, it's sort of this ugly fat bird that it's the sort of, you know, to me, the modern equivalent is the Idaho Falls Chuckers, right? Like this, like completely just like innocuous little bird that has become a logo in it.
Yeah. And I would even say, you know, if I came to you and I said, Paul, I have this amazing idea for a Major League Baseball name. And you're like, awesome. I can't wait to hear it. And you're like, it's going to be the best name ever. Great. It's going to be like one of the biggest franchises in the world when we use this name. Like, okay, great. I can't wait to hear Jason. Like, I'm on bated breath. Like, what is it? And I said, we're going to call this Major League team the Purple Pants. You would say that is absolutely ridiculous. We're going to be embarrassed. That is a terrible name, the Purple Pants. But then if I said it came back, I said, okay, I got another one. The Red Sox.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah, brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant. Classic. So I think even if we think about, you know, like if we want to come up with a name like the Purple Pants, that would sound silly today, but the Red Sox somehow works.
I think Philadelphia Phillies is never going to make it out of the first focus group, right? Like, so.
I mean, it's a great example. Yeah. I mean, and I think the when we're children, we're always taught that if something has to be explained, that it's a bad idea. Mm-hmm. And especially in minor league baseball, if it opens up a conversation where somebody hears it and they go, oh, tell me why they're called the Rubber Ducks. Tell me why they're called the Red Sox. Where did the Phillies come from? Right. Mm-hmm. Opens up free advertising for the team. So I would say that, you know, if it's right on the nose and people go, ah, the Bears, I know what a bear is. Like, mm-hmm. I don't need to like look at it. You can never chase that person down and be like, hey, wait, come back. Wait till you see the logo.
tell me what Wildcats means.
The logo's amazing. But like, I don't care. I don't, because it's we use this term around the studio a lot. You don't want something that's tastefully dull. And so the idea that a logo has to be explained or opens up a conversation, I still love learning more about America through logos.
That's the whole point of the podcast. It's the whole point of the, you summed it up perfectly. Jason, this is always so much fun. Brandiose can be found at Brandiose on all the social media outlets because you guys did the brand synergy thing, right? So go find Brandiose. Jason, I can't wait to talk to you next time. This has been a blast.
My pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, Jason. Welcome back, everybody. As I mentioned previously in the episode, this is week one of Curved Brim Media Month on the Baseball by Design podcast. And week one, of course, has to be celebrated with my friend, my co-founder of the Curved Brim Media Network, Ed Rivera, host of the Dad Hat Chronicles podcast. Your podcast was one of a few that like really inspired me to start this project. I saw you guys out there having fun creating things, and it was an inspiration to me. So this Baseball by Design podcast exists in part because I was inspired by what you were doing out there. So thanks for being who you are, man.
Full credit. Absolutely, full credit.
You were the only podcast I listened to.
There you go. Now that we have edited this, it is the only podcast that mattered, that inspired you to create your own. Yes.
And influenced my choice of hat.
There it is.
Yeah. Actually, I have been wearing, I've said this to you before, like, you know, Twitter's such a random place, right? And I'm sure I would have discovered you eventually just because we're part of this same minor league baseball community. Mm-hmm. But I think I told you at first that I would not have followed you if you had been the Flat Brim Chronicles, right? Like the fact that it was the Dad Hat Chronicles. I was like, this guy's speaking my language here. So anyway, we'll get to that. We'll get to your podcast, though. I want to talk about that a little bit more. But right now, the reason that you are on this episode is because you have a connection to the Akron Rubber Ducks. Being a former resident of Ohio and a Cleveland baseball fan, the Rubber Ducks are near and dear to your heart. So first of all, I'll just ask you, what's your connection to the Rubber Ducks?
So first of all, I love the Rubber Ducks. I've, you know, even when they were the Arrows, you know, when they did that whole rebrand, love the Arrows, love the Rubber Ducks even more, right? Love them. But when I started my whole, you know, Dad Hat Chronicles on Twitter, and this was before I did my podcast, the Rubber Ducks were the very first minor league team to ever follow me.
That's cool.
Right. So I felt an even better connection with them because they're like, all right, you know, I'm doing this, you know, they don't even know who I am, which I'm like, you know, 40 minutes away from them and they're following me. So, you know, I was like, yes.
You will always remember
your first.
That's true. So as a Cleveland baseball fan, obviously the Rubber Ducks are an affiliate. They're the AA affiliate of the Cleveland Guardians now. Was the connection to the tire industry, the rubber industry, immediately evident in that name? Like, did anyone in that area think, why in the world are they called the Rubber Ducks? Or did everyone just know that?
Yeah, no, it was immediate. Like, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, you know, Goodyear, capital, you know, rubber capital of the world. Yeah, we get it. Absolutely. There was no like, I don't get it kind of situation, right? You know, when you get a lot of these other minor league teams that you really have to dig deep to find out the meaning, everybody knew right away, Rubber Ducks, got it, right?
Yeah.
And it actually worked out. They're very popular with their name.
Absolutely. So one of the things that you have developed over the course of doing this podcast is an appreciation for the logos themselves. You know, you've really developed a sense for that. I know that you have some Rubber Ducks caps, but even whether you have them on caps or not, do you have a particular logo in these sets that really speaks to you as a fan of the team?
Oh, one, I love their let's go with the regular Rubber Duck. That's, you know, that logo is great. You know, second is their faux back, their rubber ducky.
Yeah.
Come on now. Seriously.
That's a great one.
You gotta have a good sense of humor to wear a hat, which I do. I have it.
Yeah.
With my yellow rubber ducky hat. But one of my favorites one is their Copa.
Okay.
Which is Perros Calientes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, hot dog. Right. I'm a fan of hot dogs. I love hot dogs. I love going to the ballpark and eating a hot dog. That's my thing. You know, a souvenir cup and a hot dog. Mm. And when they brought this one out, I was like, oh, my God, they're like speaking my name. Right. It's like this hot dog with a pitchfork and he's on fire. And it is such a cool logo, guys. If you have not seen it, you have to check it out because it is an absolute wonderful logo. I love it. It's great.
Well, and I know that you have an affinity for a lot of the Copa de la Diversión hats, or just the logos in general, that whole identity system. You are a Spanish speaker, and this program was developed to expand the reach of minor league baseball. Certainly, correct, it has done that with fans of logos. What do you think? And this is, I don't think, something we've ever really talked about. What do you think about the success of that program expanding the reach of minor league baseball into the Spanish speaking communities?
I think it's great, right? Yeah. You want to expand the game. Minor league baseball did it right. You want to expand the game. You want to expand the popularity of not just, you know, here in the U.S., but across the board, you know, in other countries and all of that. And even Hispanics here in the U.S. When you say that you are, you know, paying, you know, homage to Hispanic culture, and you're coming up with these crazy, awesome logos, because they're all awesome. And first of all, I'm a loud guy. So when you put loud, you know, loud colors there, it is just great, right? So you just got to automatically, I gravitated towards that, and you got to say, all right, who is doing this? Who is participating? Because I want to give my money to them buying a dad hat from them. So yeah, absolutely. I think it was a very smart idea. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. I love the program, and in part just because so many more logos to talk about, right? It's fantastic. So
you're talking over 130 teams right now that are participating.
And some of them have had multiple Copa brands, you know?
Correct.
So that's, it's amazing. Speaking of alternate brands, one of the Akron Rubber Ducks alternate brands is, and this has become sort of a funny little trope on Twitter here, is that they have a concession item called the Screamer.
Correct.
And it's a gigantic, it's a head-sized helmet filled with ice cream and all sorts of other stuff. I mean, it looks like one of these things that would take, you know, an hour and a half to eat by yourself, and it would be soup by the end of it. So you need like seven friends. I'm pretty sure that on Twitter, Carl Holcomb may have eaten one by himself, and I'm a little concerned.
I'm a little concerned because that's a lot of
it was a lot of ice cream for one person. But based on the pictures he was posting, it looked like he may have eaten one of these himself. But then, you know, because of my affinity for ice cream helmets, this thing, this logo that now features, they have an alternate brand based on this Screamer identity. Mm-hmm. And because I am, you know, I have a certain affinity for a frozen confection and a plastic helmet, this hat, this logo has become known as the Caputo, which, correct, I think actually you might have actually had something to do with at least propagating that. I don't know who started it, but I know that you've been sharing it around.
So I saw that, right? And I'm like, okay, hold on a second. This is, and I texted you, we texted each other. I'm like, listen, Paul, this is your hat. This has your name written all over it. You need to get this dad hat, because obviously it has the Screamer on it. And I'm like, come on now. And the best part about it was $10.
$10, free shipping. It was incredible. Right?
Free shipping, $10. I'm like, dude, seriously, let's do it. Yeah. And then somehow, I cannot remember who was the one who started it, but they dubbed it the Caputo hat, which it does make sense. It is the Caputo hat.
I hope I'm giving credit where it's due here. I think it might have been Joe Profit, Eric Profit's brother from the
You're probably right.
Average podcast. Yeah. So
kudos to you, Joe.
Joe, if it was you, thank you. If it was not you, we'll correct it. We'll fix it in post. Speaking of podcasts, you're here right now because we are part of the Curved Brim Media Network together. It's something that I'm super proud of. And this month, all month long in August, I just want to feature my fellow content producers on this amazing network of people that we've assembled. And it's been so much fun. Your podcast, you and Anna DiTomaso, who does the Baseball Bucket List podcast, she'll be on next week with me. You guys are two of the podcasts that really inspired me to start this. The Dad Hat Chronicles.
Hold on a second. You said this was the only podcast.
Fix it in post. I'm gonna edit all of any reference to anyone else. delete. Your podcast is called The Dad Hat Chronicles. And so one of the questions that I get sometimes, and I want to clear this up before we actually talk about the podcast itself. Can you, for the record, it's not a term that is, you know, they're just made up out of thin air. Teams will sell, they list this item on their team store as the dad hat. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me what are the distinguishing features that make something a dad hat?
A dad hat, you can consider it an unstructured, right? There's really no structure to it. The brim, it is curved. It has to be curved in order to be considered a dad hat, right? If you sit on it, no foul. You can just put it right back on your head and you're good to go.
Yeah.
For me, a dad hat, it consists of a strap with a little bit of a clasp or a buckle in the back, right? I am not a one who subscribes to the notion that a dad hat has to have that can include a Velcro back. That is an abomination. It should not be on a hat. Yes, I said that, guys. I am sorry if you feel otherwise, but it does have a strap, right? So it is adjustable. Listen, it when you think of a dad, a lot of the times, as I am, you see those hats there. You see a lot of dads wearing a dad hat. That's where the term came from, dad hats, right? You know, parents wearing it. Can my wife, you know, wears one. Yeah. My daughter wears a hat. Yeah. You know, they may not call it a dad hat, but it is, you know, the unofficial term dad hat.
Okay. All right. Your podcast isn't just about hats. Your podcast, well, it's evolved since it began. At first, it was about sort of collecting, and then it has expanded since then. So can you tell me about the sort of progression of the podcast and what you're trying to do with it and why you started it?
So I, as a fellow collector, I collect dad hats, and that's what I do. I have well over 200 plus dad hats right now at this point. When I started, I wanted to get to know the story of why people started collecting, and that got, it was a lot of fun. I got to meet a whole bunch of other cool people. One like you, because you collected, you know, the ice cream helmet. That's how we really got to know each other. There was a natural progression of things with it. I was doing, you know, for a little bit of time, I started, you know, interviewing some baseball players, some coaches and things like that. And then I was like, you know, why am I limiting it to just, you know, people that are coaching or playing? So I decided to expand it to people who are involved in baseball overall in some form of another, right? Whether you're a hat company or you're a GM or someone who works in social media, something like that, right? That are involved in baseball and what really led them to get to that. We've done some things such as Play Catch Movement, you know, things like that, that really does show how baseball has been such an integral part of many lives across the U.S.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, it's been a blast to follow it. And it's one of the reasons that we started this Curved Brim Network thing was to highlight the work that other folks are doing. One of the things that I think is really important, and I think this is across the board in Curved Brim Media, is that it's a very positive approach, right? Like there's it's never, you know, it's never hot takes and complaining, right? Like it's, you're highlighting really sort of genuine fandom or, you know, genuine sort of support of minor league baseball. And that's been fun for me as a fan of your podcast to follow that.
Yeah, and you know what? There's plenty of negativity and complaining out in the world. The only thing you're probably going to hear me complain about is going to be about the Guardians logo. I will take it to my deathbed that hat is a horrible logo. But I make fun of it, right? Sure. You do it in a manner in which it is funny. Sure. And because I'll be honest, I own 3 dad hats from the Guardians, right? So I'll still buy and support my team.
Yeah, of course.
But I think that you're right. I think the being positive and lifting each other up is a much better way of spending your time, especially right now in society. So yeah, that's the whole key of it.
Okay. Well, I want to wrap this up, Ed, with a segment that I've been doing on my podcast since the very beginning, and I've done this on every single episode, as regular listeners will know. And I call it Paul Caputo's Totally Original Baseball by Design, Very Famous Questions. So that's
very
the name,
original. I love it.
That's the name of this segment. And so I just have some questions that I think it's about time that you answered, Ed.
Sounds good.
I told you this was going to be a hard-hitting interview and there was going to be some ambush journalism here. So
bring it.
So get ready. It's about time you go on the record with some answers to some of these questions here.
I love it.
All right. Ed, pineapple on pizza?
If you would have asked me this question about 4 or 5 months ago, I would have told you absolutely not. Okay. However, I will have to credit Anna, on this one. She told me that, her wife eats pineapple with jalapenos on it. Oh. So I would say I'm on the border.
Okay.
I'm right there, but not quite wanted to say yes on it.
This is a true sign of intelligence and openness to have a perspective that you're willing to revisit in light of new evidence. So I appreciate
that. Correct. In light of new evidence, which is spicy.
Spicy evidence. That's also the name of my next podcast, actually, Spicy Evidence.
I love it.
Ed, Coke or Pepsi?
Oh, Pepsi, all the way.
Okay. If animals could talk, which do you think would be the rudest animal?
I would honestly have to say, and I'm sorry to say this, Paul, but cats.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you. I actually totally agree with you. I think it's probably true.
Cats are rude. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm allergic to them, but like there was this one time where a cat just wanted to attack me. And ever since then, I've not gotten along with a lot of cats.
I was sitting there on the sofa yesterday watching Moon Knight, and my cat was like literally in the middle of the floor, just staring at me with utter disdain. Like it was just, it can only be described as utter disdain.
Exactly. So
and that's why I think whenever you ask that question on your podcast, the cat is usually like no one's ever like manatee. So
no, nobody's going to say manatee. I mean, they're the dogs of the sea. So,
all right. If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
One superpower.
Yeah.
It would be to fly.
To fly. Okay. Very good. Yeah. Burritos or tacos?
I will go burritos all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. And you always,
don't get me wrong. I like tacos. Yeah. Burritos is a beautiful thing.
It absolutely is. Hey, which Disney princess do you think would make the best spy?
Oh, Rapunzel.
Okay. You've had a lot of time to think about these answers. And then finally, who is your favorite member of the Curb Brim Media Network?
Oh, by far. All of them.
Oh,
it's like picking a child.
If you listen to Ed's podcast, you know that this is Ed's famous, not so famous questions that he asks his guests at the end of every episode. And it's always fun. And I'm always sitting there listening, like, and I'm like, I have an answer to that question. And you've got like, I don't know, like 25 or 30 of these that you sort of rotate. And
I've actually bought 2 books.
Oh, okay. This is awesome.
With new questions. So stay tuned because there's coming. And then obviously, the more I travel to ballparks, I'm bringing them on the road as well. So,
Well, I can't wait to hear some more of your questions. I can't wait to hang out again later on this summer and again next year and all the stuff that we're going to get to do with the Curve Brim Media Network.
Oh, yeah.
And let me just say, if you're not listening to Ed's podcast, you should be. It's the Dad Hat Chronicles. You can find it on all the places. Ed is on Twitter at thedadhat216. Even though the 216, I believe, is the Cleveland area code. You live in North Carolina now, which is
a 919 area code.
Yeah, and an amazing place for minor league baseball. I'm wildly jealous.
Oh, yeah.
We have one team here in Northern Colorado, and they don't even have a stadium, the Owls with a Z without a stadium.
And, which is their official name, right?
Owls with a Z without a stadium, yeah.
Right. The name just keeps getting longer.
It's growing. It's growing. And then, obviously, on the Curved Brim Media Network. That's right. On Twitter at Curved Brim, and it's on Facebook. I think you just search Curved Brim Media on Facebook. Yep. And we have a YouTube channel. You have a YouTube channel. What's your YouTube channel?
Dad Hat Chronicles.
Dad Hat Chronicles.
So. Yep. If you look up Dad Hat Chronicles, you'll see all the videos. I put a lot of videos up there. Dad Hat reviews, unboxing videos. If I go on the ballpark, I'll do the 5 questions video. You'll see it there as well.
Fantastic. Ed, this has been so much fun. I'm having so much fun with Curb Brim Media. Thanks for being you, man. This is great.
Oh, thank you for having me. And I'm so humbled to be the sole inspiration for your podcast. This is great. Love it.
Everyone who listens to this podcast, you have Ed to thank for it.
Just kidding.
Thank you,
just
Ed.
This podcast is part of the Curved Brim Media Network. Here are some of the other members of Curved Brim Media.
Hi, this is Kelly Robinson, the minor league nerd. My YouTube channel explores the history of minor league baseball teams. More than just stats, we delve into team lineage, sharing stories from current franchises to obscure one-year wonders.
This is Patrick.
And Corey.
Of BaseballMapper.com. And we have made an interactive map to help highlight all baseball teams from the majors down to collegiate summer leagues.
We want to bring you closer to baseball, so get on the site and find a team near you today.
Hey everyone, it's Eric from the great state of Kansas.
This is Johnny from the New Orleans Baby Cakes Memorial Museum.
And we are the Earn Fun Average Podcast,
where we talk to a variety of guests about their love of baseball and have fun doing it.
America, lower your standards.
Average is what we do best.
What's up, Bucketheads? I'm Anna DiTomaso, and each week on the Baseball Bucket List podcast, I speak with a different fan about their favorite baseball memories, what the game means to them, and what's left to check off on their baseball bucket list.
Hey guys, this is Patrick Larson from the Minor League Baseball Hat History Series, and in every episode, I go through the history of minor league teams through my personal collection of hats. You can find me on Twitter at PatLarson1. I hope you guys enjoy.
Hi, this is Ed Rivera of the Data Chronicles. Join me as I interview people just like you and players, coaches, GMs on the path that led you to become a fan of the sport. Learn more about Curve Brain Media at curvebrainmedia.com.